The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by Rebecca Walser and her team of managers. They can help you protect your money in these turbulent times. Go to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Now, coming up, we're going to talk about banana republics. What are their characteristics? And is the United States becoming, or have we become, one? Blue state mayors and governors are a little upset. Illegals are showing up in places like D.C. and New York. And they don't want them. And my point is, where's your sense of compassion, guys? I'll expose some bogus math the Biden people are using to try to claim that inflation has gone to zero. And I'll begin my discussion of the great contest between Achilles and Hector at the climax of Homer's Iliad. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
Needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Guys, you might have noticed that I am doing this podcast from home, not from the studio, which is where I normally do it. And well, the reason for it is that Debbie has, well, come down sick. And so Debbie's the producer of the podcast. She's normally on the scene at the studio. So we decided to do this one. And yesterday, too, yesterday has looked a little bit strange. Now, by the way, if you're listening, it's no different. But if you're watching the podcast, you might notice a different ambiance. And that's why. But I should also announce that we had planned a getaway. We were going to go actually to a beautiful place in Mexico for a couple of days. We told Salem Media we're not going to do the podcast on Monday. So no podcast on Monday. I'll resume the podcast normal on Tuesday. That's because we sort of took Monday off the calendar, anticipating this getaway. The getaway is not happening, but we've already planned it that way. So this will be the last podcast through the weekend and then resume on Tuesday. By the way, you might also have noticed I'm actually wearing a T-shirt designed by my daughter, Danielle. And I'll lean back so you can see it if you're watching this watching it as opposed to listening to it. It says, America is not a third world country. And this is not only echoing what Trump said. He goes, we've become like a third world country. Trump is talking about the raid on Mar-a-Lago. But I also want to make this opening segment about third world countries, about banana republics. Now, by the way, if you want to check out my merchandise designed by Danielle, you can do it. You go to shop.DineshD'Souza.com. That's the website. Just shop.DineshD'Souza.com. You'll see, hoodies, caps, mugs, t-shirts, all kinds of cool stuff. And it's all very timely. It's all tied into what's going on in the country. So let's just say it sends a message. I think it's funny. And so when Danielle came to me with this idea, I'm like, go for it. Now, banana republics. My question is whether we are headed there, or as some people might think, we're there. And in order to figure out if we're there, we have to look at the characteristics. So what is a banana republic? It's kind of a strange term, isn't it? First of all, what's this have to do with bananas? Well, first of all, the term appears to have originated out of South America, which is, by the way, banana country. They grow bananas over there. And so the bananas come to symbolize a backward, undeveloped, in that sense, third world outfit. Republic is the strange word here. But as I'm going to suggest kind of appropriate in a weird way. It's a strange word because a lot of banana republics aren't really republics. They are authoritarian regimes. Remember, the word republic, a very ancient word, go back to the Roman Republic, for example. A republic is a system of government that is accountable to the people. So a government, well, Lincoln says, off for and by the people, but a government that is serving the people and not the people serving the regime. That's the definition of a republic. Now, a lot of banana republics aren't like that. They're run by despots, typically a kind of tin pot dictator who calls the shots. But it doesn't have to be a single dictator. If you look at a place like Venezuela today, it's a banana republic. And it's run by a regime. Yeah, there's Maduro at the head of it, but you've got a whole bunch of gangsters under him. So it's the tyranny is collective rather than individual. And of course, socialist tyrannies are that way. Now, the key feature of banana republics is that they make up the rules as they go along. They prosecute their opponents and they suppress basic liberties. They manipulate the election process, doing what they can to ensure that they stay in power. They like to pre-select, as in the, quote, Islamic Republic of Iran, pre-select the candidates if they can. So they flout the entire ensemble of basic rights and liberties that are characteristic of a republic. And we're seeing that here. But a second feature of banana republics, and this is why, in a way, the term is so appropriate, is banana republics do all these things while pretending not to. That's why they call themselves republics. We're not tyrannical. We're following the rules. And think of Merrick Garland in his recent press conference. I am committed to the rule of law. Oh, no, I would never selectively target anybody. In fact, we are dedicated to the opposite. We're dedicated to prosecuting criminals without fear or favor. No one's above the law. We're even-handed. This is exactly actually what you hear from tin pot despots who are flouting the rule of law, even as they pretend to be apostles of it. Now, think of a tin pot thug like Christopher Wray testifies before the Senate. Does he actually tell them, hey, listen, you know, we're trying to get information from Trump. He's not providing it for us. We're going to have to go get it if he won't. Oh, no. Doesn't say a word about this. In fact, acts like he's got to go. I've got a flight to catch. As it turns out, he's off on vacation and he goes off on a flight knowing full well that he has licensed a armed team with, by the way, machine gun, long-armed rifles to go to Mar-a-Lago and do an unprecedented raid on the leading political figure of the political opposition. That's a very banana republic thing to do.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and due to your incredible support, the original My Slippers are almost completely sold out. As a special thank you, I am launching my brand new all-season slippers, slides, and sandals for as low as $29.98. This is a limited-time offer, so go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code, and you'll get all my new footwear for as low as $29.98. My all-season slippers are made with my exclusive four-layer design that you won't find in any other slipper. They're finished with a breathable fabric so you can wear them all year round. And my new slides and sandals are made with patented impact gel, making them ultra-comfortable and extremely durable. I guarantee they'll be the most comfortable footwear you'll ever own. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen now to get your very own all-season slippers, slides, and sandals for as low as $29.98 with your promo code. This is an introductory offer and it won't last long, so order now.
There's been a pretty fierce backlash to the Biden DOJ raiding Mar-a-Lago. And you can tell that the left is reeling from this because you've got the never Trumpers. Let's adopt a wait and see attitude until we get the warrants. So these are people, suddenly they're all into caution and let's do things by the book, even though this raid was, if anything, it's the furthest thing that you can imagine by the book. And so the Washington Post, I think, felt the need, and perhaps the FBI felt the need. Well, let's come up with some lies. in order to make this seem really grave. No, we're not just collecting information for the archives. No, it's not an email that Trump sent to Obama or Trump sent to Kim Jong-un. This would be completely within his rights. Big deal. So they have put out the word, and this is, I quote, leak. Leak here doesn't mean a leak. It doesn't actually mean that the Washington Post is cultivating sources or is finding things out on the FBI. It means that the FBI is sitting down with the Washington Post and going, listen, here's our narrative. Start taking dictation. So you see here the way in which the Post is not a real newspaper. This is basically like an FBI press release. And the FBI press releases, we were really worried about some nuclear secrets, some nuclear codes, some nuclear information. Now, first of all, think about how laughable this is. So there's some nuclear information that apparently Trump either deliberately or inadvertently took with him when? In January of 2021, a year and a half ago. So the FBI knows about this, but they're sitting on it, you know. We'll let 18 months pass. It's only nuclear information. Then finally, with no provocation, let's just go get the nuclear. It's really important we get the nuclear information. So here's my tweet on the subject. I go, come to think of it, when we had a movie premiere at Mar-a-Lago a few months ago, I happened to stop in the restroom and I noticed some random numbers written on the mirror. I wonder if those were the launch codes for World War III. And then I say, well, I guess I should have written them down, but I really had to pee. And of course, my point here is to, in a sense, mock the preposterousness of this claim that somehow Trump is sitting on dangerous nuclear information that the U.S. government has to urgently retrieve. And putting on this posture is posturing theater. This is really what the left and the never Trumpers are all about. Here's Liz Cheney. She goes, she's talking about, I've been ashamed to hear members of my party, this is going to be people like me, attacking the integrity of the FBI agents involved. Well, first of all, we're not attacking the agents involved. They're functionaries. They're doing what they're told. Quite honestly, if they were instructed to do something completely barbaric, the simple truth, and this may just be a truth about human nature, most of them would do it. If you were to tell the FBI, go here, shoot these people, they would do it. They're taking orders. And so this is not about the FBI agent on the ground. This is about the decisions being made by the organized crime syndicate that runs the FBI. These are sickening comments that put the lives of patriotic public servants at risk. I love this public servants nonsense. First of all, and by the way, politicians love to do this. We're public servants. The FBI are public servants. I'm like, if you're really a public servant, why don't you work for free? If you're truly doing this for service because you believe in your country, this is your civic duty, why are you collecting money? Isn't it a fact that most people who join the FBI, it's a job? They go to college, they study criminal justice, they decide I'll become an FBI agent. Now, what are their motives? Their motives are probably complicated, similar to the motives of people who become cops or go into the military. It's a melange of motives. There could be an element of patriotism. There could be an element of there are lots of bad guys out there and I want to get them. It could be I like to play with guns. It could be I love to fight with people. It could be I have a thrill of power. I'm the guy with the badge and no one is able to draw a gun against me. I'm able to draw a gun against them. I like to see people's Adam's apple go up and down their throat with nervousness when I approach them. I mean, the idea that these are all just noble public servants. And Liz Cheney herself, very interesting article in Breitbart that points out that Liz Cheney, her net worth has gone up from $7 million when she took office in 2017 to somewhere around $40 million. Now, how is this possible? How can you be a public servant motivated by philanthropic concerns solely, not motivated by lining your pockets? Now, obviously, Liz Cheney is not collecting a salary that takes her to $44 million, and she's not obviously like Biden or Hillary Clinton renting out American foreign policy. So what's she doing? Well, it turns out that her husband is a partner at a massive law firm. This is Latham & Watkins, a deeply politically connected law firm that gets a lot of its business not just from abroad, but get some of it from China. And Breitbart sort of has the receipts on this. This is Philip Perry, Cheney's husband. His law firm has been doing business with the Chinese National Nuclear Corporation. They talk about these corporations called TME, Exelon Corporation, which have been described evidently by Time Magazine as a tool of the Chinese government. Now, by the way, while Mr. Cheney is getting all his deals through his law firm, and he's a partner there, by the way, so he has a stake in the firm, Liz Cheney is sitting on the Armed Services Committee. And so you've got this highly incestuous relationship in which you've got, and I'm sure for the Chinese, it's very helpful to do business with a guy whose wife is sitting at the top of a major committee that deals with armed services. So this is really how these Washington politicians are able to leverage their position and their power to line their pockets, all the while putting on this sanctimonious posture. We're public servants. We're not doing it for... What would Liz Cheney do if she wasn't in politics? I mean, where would the Cheney name matter? Well, I guess she could do something local, become a real estate agent in Wyoming and sell, you know, properties and ranches and so on using the Cheney name. So possibly she could come out okay that way. I think she's done a lot better in politics, and I doubt that her sole motive, I'm not saying it's not part of her motive, but her sole motive, as with FBI agents, is simply devotion to the larger cause. Looking for a movie that celebrates the gift of life? Get ready for Life, Mark. This is the new movie from the Kendrick brothers and our friend Kirk Cameron, opening in theaters everywhere September 9th. Now, in Life, Mark, David's comfortable world is turned upside down when his birth mother unexpectedly reaches out to him, longing to meet the 18-year-old son she's only held once. With the encouragement of his adopted parents, David embarks on a life-altering journey of discovery that leads to a staggering truth from his past. Inspired by a true story, Life, Mark is a powerful reminder that one decision, one choice, can impact so much more than one life. Life, Mark is pro-family, pro-love, pro-forgiveness, pro-reconciliation, and pro-new beginnings. So if you are too, make your plans to see Life, Mark. See Life, Mark in theaters nationwide beginning September 9th. Learn more about Life, Mark and get your tickets today at lifemarkmovie.com. That's lifemarkmovie.com. In a, genius move, the governors of red states, I'm thinking here specifically of Texas and Arizona, so Governor Abbott in Texas and Governor Ducey in Arizona, have decided to dispatch illegals to blue states, to hand them over to the blue state governors and the blue city mayors. And it's like, hey, guys, it's your problem now. Or maybe not your problem. Maybe it's a gift to you. It's your opportunity. You've been talking about these people. You've been celebrating them. You've been calling yourself sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, places like New York, Washington, D.C. Okay, you know what? Your wish has been granted. You want illegals? Here you go. And so busloads of illegals, in fact, 6,100 migrants from Texas have been sent to D.C. They go 6 days a week, as early as 6 a.m., as late as 11 p.m., sometimes multiple buses a day. And now Abbott has sent the first bus to New York City. And look, the Biden administration is unleashing these illegals into Texas and into Florida. And its motives are, well, you can say purely cynical. I think the motives are twofold. One, let's, over the long term, try to tip the political balance in these states. Arizona is already a swing state. Let's try to make it a reliable Democratic state. Texas is not so much of a swing state, but nevertheless, the more we can pump in the illegals, maybe this will accrue to the long-term benefit of the Democrats. And the second motive is just mean-spirited. You know what? Your red state governors, we want to give you headaches. We want to exacerbate your problems. Here, you deal with these people. We'll let them in. You can't stop us. And then we just basically leave them at your doorstep, almost like a kind of unwanted infant, and like, you take care of it. It's your problem now. And Abbott and Ducey over time have gotten exasperated with this. And finally, they had this, well, Abbott had the idea. Ducey then picked up on it. And that is, you know what? Let's send them into Biden's America. Let's send them to places that seem to welcome them, places that have been saying things like walls are meaningless. Let's have compassion. Illegals are people too. Let's not call them illegals. They're merely undocumented, as if the problem was just a lack of documentation. You know, they've got the wrong paperwork. This is just a matter of, it's just a paperwork problem. And what's funny is that as these illegals are dispatched already, for example, the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, is like, this is the problem. We can't deal with this. And Mayor Bowser in D.C., she's demanding the federal government send the National Guard, the D.C. National Guard, to help deal with the problem. Now, the federal government has not done that, and I don't know if they're going to do that or not, but it gives you an idea of what hypocrites these blue state mayors are, because it's all rhetoric, it's all posturing, and of course they take a certain smug satisfaction that it's the red states that are scrambling to deal with these problems. But when they get them, then suddenly they start shrieking, oh, we know our public services are not up to the task. I mean, think of the volume of illegals in a state like Texas compared to the tiny number that have shown up in D.C. and the even tinier, in fact, infinitesimal number, comparatively speaking, that have shown up in New York. And yet there's pushback now from those, quote, compassionate mayors. NPR has a kind of a article that makes me chuckle. GOP governors send buses of migrants to D.C. and New York with no plan for what's next. Who needs a plan? You mean the GOP governors of Texas and Arizona need to develop a plan and send the plan over to Muriel Bowser or over to Eric Adams? We have a plan for you. No, we don't have a plan. We don't want these people. They don't belong in the country. We'd like to send them back to Mexico. By the way, Carrie Lake was on an interview and said something very interesting. She goes, when I'm governor of Arizona, we're not sending illegals to blue states. Why? Because I don't want to, in a sense, embed them deeper into the country. They need to go to Mexico where they belong. So this way, Carrie Lake is, I guess, suggesting that Ducey and Abbott are taking a kind of, well, maybe clever, but they're not really hitting the problem. Why? Because in a sense, there's a tacit acceptance. We got these illegals. We don't know what to do with them. We'll send them from here over there. Carrie Lake's point is, no, we're not going to just send them from here to there. We're going to send them right back to the border. If they need buses, okay, the buses will transport them to Mexico, which is where they came from. I mean, they might have come originally from other places, but they're going to go back to where they belong. Outside the United States, they can apply, of course, legally for asylum or legally for visas. But that is the way to do it. Do it the way that Dinesh did it and innumerable immigrants have done it over 100 years or more. Get in line. Follow the legal or lawful process. But of course, you know, you can't blame the illegals by themselves because the Biden administration is working hand in hand with the cartels. Not an open collaboration, but more like, you know, two sides of a scissors, each side knowing what the other side is doing. And the corrupt operation not able to go forward without the cartels doing their part of bringing the illegals from all over Central America. By the way, Chinese, Iranians, Asian Indians, the gamut, Venezuelans, get them to the Mexican border. And then the Biden administration, in a sense, unlocks the gate or really doesn't have a gate at all. So I think the red state governors are doing what they can to deal with a difficult problem. Carrie Lake also has a point, which is that the problem needs at some point a more fundamental solution. It's not just a matter of shuffling the illegals back and forth within the United States short term. That's a good thing to do. It teaches the blue states a lesson. It exposes their hypocrisy, but there does need to be a long-term solution. From cringing at the prices of the pump to getting a ridiculous check at your favorite restaurant, inflation is hitting us all where it hurts. And it really hurts. That's why I started using Upside. Now, Upside is an incredible app. It's for anyone who buys gas, groceries, or dines out, i.e. everyone. Now, with every purchase, I'm earning cash back thanks to Upside. It's almost too good to be true. The amount of money I've saved on gas while using Upside, and it's really easy to use. Now, to get started, download the free Upside app in the App Store or Google Play. Use my promo code Dinesh, get $5 or more cash back on your first purchase of $10 or more. Next, claim an offer for whatever you're buying on Upside. Check in at the business, pay as usual with a credit or debit card, and get paid. You can earn 3 times more cash back with Upside than you can with credit card rewards or loyalty programs. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon and other brands. Now, Upside users are earning more than $1 million every week, and they have a 4.8 rating on the App Store. So not only am I saving money on gas, but I get cash back in return. So go ahead, download the free Upside app and use promo code Dinesh. Get $5 or more cash back on your first purchase of $10 or more. That's Upside on the App Store. I've titled this segment, Inflation Statistics and the Manipulation of Statistics. Now, the inflation rate currently in the United States is 8.5%. It was 8.5% in July, which is last month, and it was 8.5% in June, the previous month. So we're running an 8.5% inflation. Now, inflation is a metric that is measured on an annual basis. So when someone says we have 8.5% inflation, what we mean is that prices of a basket of commodities are 8.5% more costly, the same basket, than they were a year ago. And this is the accepted metric for measuring inflation. It's used not just by economists across the United States, whatever their politics. It's also used by economists in other countries. So you can compare the United States inflation rate to a year ago or 5 years ago or historic comparisons. And you can also compare it to other countries. How does the U.S. compare to, say, England or compare it to India? Now, here is Corinne Jean-Pierre, the press spokesman, who says, quote, "We have just received news that our economy had 0% inflation in July. While the price of some things went up, the price of others, like gas, clothing, and more, dropped." First of all, I love the way that when prices go up, they're never met. Well, some things went up, but a lot of things were down, such as A, B, C, D, and E. You italicize and enumerate the things that went down while kind of quickly passing over, hoping people don't notice the things that go up. But what caught my eye was the 0%. I just told you that the inflation rate in July was the same as it was in June, which is 8.5%. So where do we get the zero? Well, we get the zero by comparing July to June. So you take the July rate, 8.5, and you subtract the June rate, 8.5, and you get zero. Well, think about this. If this were the metric used in the Carter years, then no one could talk about inflation rates of 8, 9, 10, and 11%, because you'd constantly be comparing the rate only to the previous month. If the previous rate was 14%, and now your rate is 15%, you'd just go, well, we really have inflation of only 1%. Or if it was 12% last month and it's 11% this month, not only would you have 0% inflation, inflation would be negative. We'd have negative 1% inflation. Now, this is actually a madness. Obviously, you can see what the Biden people are trying to do. They've got this so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which is, by the way, just passed, which is to say it's not going to go into effect. Nothing has really changed. Nothing changes that fast with the federal government. But they're almost implying, like, 2 days after we signed this act, look, inflation is down to zero. I mean, we are just magicians. We're miracle workers. We're amazing. Now, I just want to expose the kind of mathematical fallacy here. Let's say I've got money in the bank and I'm earning 10% on my money. That means that I'm earning a 10% per annum rate in June, and I'm earning a 10% per annum rate in July. Now, the rate in June and July is the same. It's 10%. And if somebody would ask me, what am I making? What's the rate on my money? I would go 10%, and that would be correct. But using the math of Corinne Jean-Pierre, the actual amount I'm earning on my money, or at least the rate of interest, is 0%. I've earned 0% in July. Why? Because if I take the rate of June, 10, and the rate of July, 10, and I subtract the one from the other, I get zero. So the idea here is that the Biden administration, now, you know, it's not unusual for governments to try to bend statistics and facts to their political benefit. But the brazen misuse of simple statistics, of simple numbers, almost relying on the audience, and in some cases a fair assumption, people don't know a whole lot about statistics, they don't know a whole lot about math. And so even in a simple number problem like this, and I see it in my feed, I made a comment about this on social media, and people go, well, Dinesh, can't you see that the inflation rate was 8.5 in June? It's now 8.5% in July. So we're at 0% inflation. We're at 0% inflation in the sense that we've got the same inflation rate in July as we did in June. The comparison is to the previous year. So we have not 0% inflation, but 8.5% inflation. It's pretty colorful at the grocery store and the produce section. You've probably noticed all the vibrant colors of fruits and veggies. Well, our friend Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all those colors you see represent nutritional variety. Now, I don't eat anywhere near the 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies. So Balance of Nature is the way I give my body what it needs to stay healthy. That's why Debbie and I take those six little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. 31. So variety equals vitality. Give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. Invest in your health. Invest in your life. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for years. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code AMERICA. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code AMERICA. You probably remember the Breonna Taylor case. This was the woman, Breonna Taylor, who was killed by police shooting. A number of officers approached her apartment. They were really on a drug arrest, and they had a warrant. And they, as they approached the apartment, Breonna Taylor was apparently with her boyfriend, and the boyfriend opens fire and shoots at the officers. The officers then shoot back, and the tragic result is that Breonna Taylor is killed in the crossfire. Now, I had John Mattingly, who was actually one of the officers. In fact, I believe the officer who might have even fired the fatal shot, who was on the podcast, and he talked about why their actions were reasonable. His actions were reasonable, and this was a lawful drug bust, and the officers were fired upon, and they returned fire. And so this was obviously not a desired outcome. No one was trying to kill Breonna Taylor, but she was tragically shot, and these things do happen. And normally they are dealt with in a civil way. And by civil here, I don't mean in a courteous way. I mean, actually, they're dealt with through the civil law. So Breonna Taylor's family, for example, can say she was wrongfully killed and demand that the authorities pay a sum to her family. But that's actually not what's been happening. The left immediately made this a racial incident. And now, almost as if to sort of placate the left, the Merrick Garland group of thugs, which is to say the politicized Justice Department, has filed federal charges against four of the police officers. Now, interestingly, John Mattingly, who was on the show, is not charged. He's not one of the people charged, which would seem to mean that his actions, as he said, in the circumstances were warranted. The charges are actually not about the shooting itself. They're basically about falsifying an affidavit. Apparently, two of the officers are accused of falsifying information on the affidavit used to get the warrant. And of these four officers, two of them have evidently already been fired, and the department is in the process of terminating the other two. So this appears to me to be largely because the termination process began almost immediately. And this is how the police authorities, they generally don't, when there's a politicized case, particularly when there's a racial motive that's alleged, you know, Black Lives Matter, and so on, these police departments run away. They run away from their officers. They abandon them. They do not back them. In fact, they bring other officers to testify against them. So all of this raises an interesting question. Why would you today want to be an officer under these circumstances, particularly an officer dealing in Black and minority neighborhoods, where even if you're acting based upon reasonable fear, you're acting upon the belief that you're pursuing, in this case, a drug dealer, you're going to find yourself A, fired, B, indicted. And so evidently what happened here is that these officers said that Breonna Taylor had received drug packages at this address, the address of this apartment, and that was used to get the warrant. And now the Justice Department is claiming, evidently, that those affidavits were falsified. I don't know if they mean to say that she was not receiving the packages, or the officers didn't know but still claimed that drug dealing was going on in that apartment. This is the Merrick Garland operation coming down on these officers. We'll have to obviously watch and see how the case plays out. I'm not trying to prejudge the case itself. I simply suspect that what you have here, again, a highly politicized case in which the Justice Department is doing something, not because of the rule of law, not because they're trying to achieve justice in the matter, but because they are trying to appease a baying and howling leftist mob. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health. Exercising, climbing stairs, all the things young people take for granted. These aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to suffer or endure the normal aging aches and pains. Why? Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Now, Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. Most people who use Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie's a true believer. She's excited. She finally gets to do her bar exercise class now that she's alleviated a frozen shoulder thanks to Relief Factor. Debbie's even able to do planks, push-ups. So she's like, wow, this is great. I never want to be without this again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more. That's 833-690-7246 or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. I've mentioned as we come to the climactic books of the Iliad, books sort of 20 through 23, there are 24 books in the Iliad, and I've mentioned how Achilles, even as he returns to battle, does so in a manner that emphatically rejects the human condition. He won't accept the death of Patroclus, even though deaths are normal in war. Remember, Achilles himself sent Patroclus into battle. He agreed with Patroclus, yeah, you can wear my armor, you can take my chariot, you can take my shield. We're going to allow the Trojans to think that you are me. Well, in that situation, it is hardly surprising. It may not even be likely, but it certainly is possible that Patroclus would be mortally wounded, that he would be killed. Yet Achilles acts as if this is just unacceptable. At least he won't accept it. And in fact, he displays this kind of rejection of the laws of war and really the laws of humanity when he scolds his two immortal horses. They return back after Patroclus is killed. They return to Achilles. And Achilles basically says, listen, I'm going to go into battle now, but don't fail me the way you failed Patroclus. Don't, quote, leave me for dead as you left Patroclus. Wow. And the horses are kind of stung by this. And remarkably, Homer has this sort of delicious turn of events where one of the horses, Xanthus, speaks back to Achilles. Now, a horse can't normally speak. And by the way, Homer knows this. Don't think that the ancients lived in such a mystical world. They're like, maybe horses can speak. Nonsense. Horses didn't speak in Homer's time any more than they do today. So Homer has the goddess Hera infuse Xanthus with a gift of speech. So Xanthus becomes not only, Xanthus is an immortal horse, it's one of the two immortals, but now Xanthus is a talking immortal horse. Think of what a strange creature that makes Xanthus. And I think part of what makes this scene so interesting is that you have one strange creature, a beast, a horse, but that is like the gods in being immortal, and is like Achilles in being able to speak. So a real hybrid, if you will, speaking to, well, another hybrid, Achilles, the son of a goddess. So in that sense, related to the gods, but also somebody capable of real brutishness, as we're going to see in the next couple of books in the Iliad. Achilles flouts and violates all the rules of war, even though those rules are pretty primitive, pretty barbaric. Nevertheless, Achilles violates them. Now, Xanthus says to Achilles, this time we will save you, mighty Achilles, this time, but your hour is near. So what Xanthus is saying is that, Achilles, you have a short life. Now, by the way, Achilles sort of dismisses this because he knows this. His mother has already told him this. But the horse then goes on to say something very remarkable, and that is it says, we didn't leave Patroclus for dead. It wasn't us. It wasn't our fault. Basically, they say that this is destiny. Nor was it slowness or slackness on our part that allowed the Trojans to despoil Patroclus. No, the best of gods, fair-haired Leto's son, this is Apollo, killed him in the front lines and gave Hector the glory. So here is here are the horses affirming what Patroclus himself had said, which is basically, Hector, you struck the final blow, but it was Apollo that sort of slammed me from behind, knocked out my armor, made me defenseless. You just administered the kind of closing a stroke. So the horse is pushing back at Achilles and essentially reminding Achilles, you're a human being. Human beings go to war. They might win glory, but sometimes they're killed. And so you've got, as I say, this curious, this strange conversation between a talking immortal horse and a not entirely mortal man. And it is about Homer's great theme. And Homer's great theme is, what is it that distinguishes the human condition? So here's Achilles, and he's rejecting. This is all symbolic of Achilles not willing to accept the human condition. He refuses to believe that Patroclus is even dead. As I mentioned last time, he won't bury him. He won't allow the psyche, the psuche of Patroclus, his soul, if you will, to go to Hades. Nor will Achilles himself act in a normal way. He won't eat, he won't bathe, he won't sleep. So he has subtracted himself from humanity. And as we'll see in the next couple of books, he becomes downright superhuman to a degree, covered by fire. He becomes, in a sense, fire, but he also becomes, in a way that repels us and is quite appalling in the narrative, he becomes subhuman.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
I'm in book 21 of the Iliad, and I'm going to focus on an incident that illustrates the inhumanity of Achilles. his unwillingness to accept even the harsh code of war in the for Homeric warriors. Now, I mentioned yesterday or the day before that Achilles, in a very savage proclamation, says that he will seize 12 Trojan boys, 12 Trojan, we would say teenagers, kill them and sacrifice them on the pyre, on the funeral pyre of Patroclus. So he's not having a funeral, but when he has a funeral, he goes, I'm going to sacrifice, essentially human sacrifice, which is utterly outrageous. Outrageous even by the standards of the Homeric era. But Achilles goes beyond that. And while he is rampaging through the Trojans, killing people left and right, and as I mentioned, Achilles in, I believe, one, maybe even two books of the Iliad, is killing so many people that Homer just focuses on Achilles' casualties. Nobody else is described in these books as being killed by anyone else, and the Trojans aren't killing anybody. They appear to be completely on the defensive, and Achilles has, in a sense, become fire. He's become like the fire god himself. Now, Achilles happens to come across a young boy, teenager, named Lycaon. And Lycaon, as it turns out, is a son of Priam, but he's a boy. He's too young to be a combatant. But there he is on the battlefield. Achilles seizes him. And Achilles has come across Lycaon before. In an earlier book, he captures Lycaon. And Lycaon basically says, please let me go. He supplicates Achilles. And supplication is a system in which a warrior kind of goes down on one knee, puts one arm on the knee of a fighter that has captured him, and puts the other arm on their face or their beard. The idea is that the warrior submits completely. The warrior essentially says, I'm unarmed. Look, my hands are where you can not only see them, but where you can touch them. I'm imploring you. And what Lycaon implores Achilles to do is to ransom him. And this is, by the way, normal practice in warfare. We see it regularly in the Iliad. When you capture a kind of prized opponent, you exchange the opponent for booty. In other words, you use the opponent, the captive, to generate time or honor or booty for yourself and for your side. And so Achilles has one time previously ransomed Lycaon back to his father, Priam. Priam, by the way, has a lot of sons, raising the interesting question, which is not definitively settled in the Iliad, is Priam a polygamist? Does he have multiple wives? The only wife we see in the Iliad is Hecabe, and that is Hector's mom. But does Priam have other wives? He seems to have, 15, 20, 30 kids, and obviously that would be impossible all with one wife. In any event, here's Lycaon. He's captured by Achilles, and what does he do? He begs, quote, I am at your knees, Achilles. Pity me. You have to respect me as your suppliant. So he basically appeals to the rules of war, and he says, I've been ransomed before, and you can get a handsome ransom for me again. And then he says, so he's appealing not just for mercy, but he is concretely calling upon the agreed rules of war. Here's Achilles' response. Shut up, fool. Stop talking ransom. Before Patroclus met his destiny, it was more to my taste to spare Trojan lives, capture them and sell them overseas. But now they all die, every last Trojan. And he goes on to say, you die too, friend. Don't take it hard. Patroclus died, and he was a far better man than you. And then, says Achilles, take a look at me. Do you see how huge I am? How beautiful? I think beautiful here is maybe a mistranslation. How grand in a terrifying sense. I have a noble father. My mother was a goddess, but I too am in death's shadow. So here is Achilles appearing to accept the human condition, saying basically death comes to us all. And yet his conduct shows that he doesn't actually accept it. He accepts it more for himself, interestingly enough, than he does for Patroclus. And as soon as he says this, he seizes his spear, draws his sword, drives it through the collarbone. It says the blade sank into his trunk and he fell prone to the ground. So he kills this kid. He kills Lycaon. And you cannot read this without flinching, without blanching, without recoiling. Why? Because this is Achilles who has become, in this case, not godlike, but truly a kind of barbarian.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.